It's Sunday, the 6th of December, 2015. Happy birthday to Giannis Antetokounmpo. Welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and JE925. My name is Josh Lloyd, and a quick reminder, if you want to be a sponsor of the podcast for a day, all you need to do is leave yourself a review on iTunes, or leave me a review on iTunes, and that goes a very long way to helping the podcast get more success and get out to more people. So I do appreciate everyone who's done that. There's been a couple come in recently, and they've been awesome. So thank you for doing that. And of course, don't forget Moneyball, which is Australasia's only daily fantasy sports site. You can go on there, win yourself some real cash in daily fantasy sports for NFL and for NBA, of course, Premier League soccer, A-League soccer here in Australia, and AFL when that kicks back on as well. So make sure you're checking out moneyball.com.au. Okay, guys, it was a big day in the NBA. A big Saturday with 10 games on, a couple of early ones. We're going to be covering all that today. Plus, we're going to be looking ahead to Sunday's games to try and see what we can work out with the short slate on Sunday.
Let's get to it.
I will, Michael. The monstrous line of the night. One of the early games. It goes to Kyle Lowry of the Toronto Raptors. He couldn't get the victory, but he'll probably be just as happy to get the monstrous line of the night nod over Steph Curry. He played 38 minutes. He went for a career-high 41 points. He hit 6 threes, had 3 boards, 7 assists, 4 steals, a block on 14 of 26 shooting. And then he also went 7 of 8 from the free throw line and did it while only giving up 1 turnover as well. So a huge game from Kyle Lowry, who has been just massive this season. You were able to draft him probably in the 20s, maybe even in the 30s. It depends on when you drafted. If you drafted early, you could have got him in the 30s. He had a red-hot preseason that brought him back into the 20s. He's a top-10 player at the moment. He's averaging 22, 5, and 6 with 3 threes and 2.5 steals. He has just been crazy good. Just nobody. Now, he was good last year to start the season. He wasn't this good, and then he dropped off significantly. But there were some injuries involved in that. This is clearly career form for Kyle Lowry. If he's not a starting all-star at this point, it's a joke. He is just carrying this team, basically, and doing a fantastic job for your fantasy team. You can't complain. I wouldn't be selling high on him. I probably don't think he remains as a top-five player, but you're not going to get a top-five player back in exchange for him. He'll find himself comfortably in that 10 to 20 range, I think, by the time the season's done, and he's got a massive chance to actually end himself inside the... Well, not end himself... He's got a massive chance to end up inside the top 10 when all is said and done. So Kyle Lowry gets himself the monstrous line of the night. The waiver wire line of the night. There's always a chance that someone in Los Angeles with the Clippers was going to go off with Chris Paul and JJ Redick out, and Jamal Crawford was that guy. He's only owned in 58% of leagues. He had 32 points, including 6 threes, 1 rebound, 5 assists on really efficient shooting. And we've seen him this season put up big lines when he's given those big roles when Redick is out or when Paul is out, but otherwise he's been fairly pedestrian. He's averaging 1.9 rebounds a game. You know how hard that is to do? 1.9. His scoring is not high enough, only at 13 points a game, so he's not actually helping there. The threes at 1.3 are okay, but he's offering nothing else. 37% from the field. Oh, that's not true. Nothing else. 92% from the free throw line is pretty handy. So that's what he's currently doing at the moment. He is not a guy that I think needs to be owned in most sort of formats. He's a stream guy for when situations like this occur, when Paul is out and when Redick is out. And that's exactly what he's been. Well, that's exactly what he did today. So a big game from Jamal Crawford, and congratulations if you used him in daily or if you substituted him in and streamed him in into your seasonal league, because that's a pretty nice performance from him there. The young gun of the night. Haven't heard from this guy for a while. It's Karl Anthony Towns of the Minnesota Timberwolves. He went 27-12. He hit a 3. He had 2 assists. He had 2 blocks. And the best thing is he played 32 minutes. The second best thing is that he and Gorgui Dieng played defense together, or played on the court together down the stretch. shockingly enough, it works. I know it's amazing, but it actually does work. And Sam Mitchell, hopefully he realizes that this is great for Towns owners. He's only averaging 24 minutes a game over the last couple of weeks. So for him to get back to 30, it's going to push his value obviously back up. And he wasn't struggling with form. He was just struggling with not getting minutes. And that wasn't really anything to do with him. It was some delusional thought from his coach. So if we can get him back to 30 minutes a game, which might be tough. It's not easy for rookie big men to do that. He's going to put up these top 30 sort of numbers. But if he gets kept back to 25 or 26 minutes, he's going to drop off. And he's not going to drop far. He's not going to be out to the top 100 or anything like that. But he's not going to be that sort of superstar guy that we saw at the start of the season. So this is a good way to get back on track here for Karl Anthony Towns. The dud of the night. This is not a recording. It is Danny Green again. 29 minutes for Green. 6 points, 4 rebounds, no threes, no assists, no steals, no blocks. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say about this guy anymore. The minutes are still there. The defensive stats are not happening. Nothing's happening. He can't shoot anymore, apparently. Apparently he's forgotten how to shoot. I don't know what it is. I completely understand dropping him. I don't actually own him in any leagues. If I did, I would probably be holding. But that's not true. I think I do. I own him in one league. My mistake. And I'm not dropping him in that league. I understand dropping him completely. There's a lot of, like, this is, you know, a quarter of the season done, and he's had one decent game. That's about it. But the potential is there for him. I reckon that in a lot of situations, and in a 10-team league, you can probably move on if there's someone you want to add. It all depends on who you're looking at adding. If you're looking at adding someone who's got real short-term value or is not a good player, then maybe I wouldn't. But if there's someone who's red hot that's screaming at you, then maybe you consider dropping Danny Green. But it's getting to the point now where it's becoming a trend that he's this bad. I don't know what it is. I don't know what is going on with him. It is one of the more confusing things that I've seen this season or in any season of recent memory, the drop-off from Danny Green. It doesn't make any sense. He's getting basically the same amount of shots per game. It's just that his defensive stats have fallen off, and I don't know why that is. His ability to shoot has fallen off incredibly. Like, is he a 13% worse shooter? It seems completely unlikely. But that's what the numbers are telling us at the moment. I don't know what to make of it at this point in time for Danny Green. And I know a lot of people are feeling the pain of having drafted him and having these sort of performances basically every single night. Not good. The daily fantasy value play of the day is Wes Johnson of the Los Angeles Clippers. He was a minimum salary player. He put up a 37.4, which is obviously pretty impressive. 21-7, 6 threes, 2 assists, 2 steals, 1 block. He's a guy that I've harped on about for years and years, that he's a triple one player, and generally if he gets minutes, he can put up decent stats. This is the first time we've really seen him do it with the Clippers. He was starting and then got moved to the bench behind Luke Marmute. I don't think we're going to rely on him to get 36 minutes a night going forward, especially when Redick and Paul return, but this was a nice performance, and let's see exactly what plays out with it in the coming games. But not an ideal situation to think that there's going to be tremendous value for Wes Johnson moving forward. Okay, let's start looking at these games in a little bit more detail now. Let's bring up the box scores for you guys watching the video. You can see them up on the screen. There we go. And let's look at these games in a little bit more detail. The first game was one of the early games. The Denver Nuggets and the Philadelphia 76ers. I don't know if interesting is the right word. The Nuggets would be happy that they got the victory, but some odd things happened during the middle of that game. Well, not in the middle, just with the rotation. That's what I'm trying to say. Sorry, I'm a bit tongue-tied. A couple of days after saying that Nikola Jokic had earned his starting job and he's earned this spot, he didn't play at all. If you can figure that one out, you're better than me. Joffrey Lavernier assumed the starting lineup, came off a double-double, and he played 9 minutes. I think all this is pointing to is that these Denver centers, it's real hard to rely on them. Like, real hard. 9 minutes for Lavernier, no minutes for Jokic. So we had Darrell Arthur, Kenneth Faried, and JJ Hickson playing the bulk of the minutes at center. It's just not good. Jokic in 12-team leagues is done. Lavernier had limited upside to me in that situation anyway. I don't know what Mike Malone is getting at with this team or with that sort of center rotation. It's a mess. It's probably a stay away in anything outside of, say, 16-team leagues, maybe 14-team leagues. But Lavernier played 9 minutes and his backup didn't play at all. That's a worrying sign. Danilo Gallinari played through a bone bruise on his knee. He played 39 minutes. I don't think we need to be too concerned about that. 24-7, three threes, a steal and a block, a big night from him. Darrell Arthur got the start over Kenneth Faried. Wasn't his big performance like the other night, but it was still pretty impressive. 8-3 with two threes, two steals, and a block. Don't think we want to add him in standard leagues. And Will Barton went 16-9 in his 33 bench minutes. We still had no Gary Harris in this one, dealing with a concussion. Barton obviously is a must-own player. Emmanuel Mudiay, again, killed percentages and killed your turnovers. 10, 5, and 6. He's very, very difficult to own. He shouldn't be owned in as many leagues as what he is. And yes, he's a starting point guard, but he's more detrimental in most formats. You need to be set up with a very specific punch strategy to be able to absorb all the damage that Emmanuel Mudiay does at this point in his career. Interesting, they're giving Mike Miller 16 minutes. Well, Mike Miller's been a corpse for about 4 years, but he played 16 minutes. He had 8 points with 6 assists. And Jokic didn't play at all. Can't work it out. And they got the victory, but it was by 3 points over the Sixers. So I don't think they should be popping too many champagne corks. Just an odd situation in that front court. Onto the Sixers. Bob Cove had a big game, 18-10, 5 threes, 2 steals, and a block. And Isaiah Cannon played 24 minutes, going 15 points with 5 threes. It was the return of Tony Roden. So many people were waiting to see that. He played 13 minutes, 4 points and 3 assists on his typical bad shooting. And had 5 turnovers in 13 minutes. Now, we talk about Emmanuel Mudiay. That's what Tony Roten is. But he's a worse player. This is exactly what Roten is. He's Emmanuel Mudiay, but worse. And he's coming off an ACL injury, and he's going to be limited in minutes. This is what you're going to have to expect from him. Nerlens Noel started again in place of Jahlil Okafor, 14-5 with a couple of blocks. So not too bad. Not all that exciting, though. Jeremy Grant is looking really good defensively. Now, 10 points and 1 rebound is not awesome. 4 steals and 2 blocks. It looks like he's locked himself into a 28-minute role moving forward. So I think that he has value in 12-team formats. Nick Stauskas played 28 off the bench and had 9 points. I don't think we need to worry about him for standard leagues. But TJ McConnell, back out of nowhere here. 30 minutes. He moved. So this is another thing. How can you predict it? That McConnell's minutes have been trending down from like 30 to 29, 28, 26, 21, 20. And then an extra point guard gets added in Tony Roten, and his minutes go up. He played 30 minutes here alongside Isaiah Cannon, went 10, 8, and 6 with 3 steals. And if you knew he was going to continue to do that, you'd be happy with it. But nothing makes sense. Why were his minutes trending downwards? And then when another guy comes in, yes, Phil Pressey got waived, so Roten's basically taking those minutes. Why is his minutes back up? What do you do with McConnell? He's still got value if he's going to get these minutes, definitely. The assists, the rebounds, and the steals, and that's exactly where his value comes from, is those three categories. They're going to be there if he gets minutes. But is this just a one-off? It feels a bit that way, that the minutes went back up as a one-off situation, but we just don't know. It's quite tough to know. I can see adding him and hoping that it sticks for a few more weeks. I can understand that completely, but I'm not full of confidence of it happening. The Golden State Warriors and the Toronto Raptors. Steph Curry, 44, 2-7, and 9 three-pointers in 38 minutes. Awesome percentages again. We know that he's fantastic. Not much more to say about Steph, really. Klay Thompson, he's definitely starting to get it back going. 26 points with 4 rebounds, 6 threes and a block, and he's starting to come good after a really, really, really dry spell to start the year. And Draymond Green went 16, 9, and 6 with no other stats there. Brandon Rush continues to start in place of Harrison Barnes, and he's not doing much, so we don't need to concern ourselves with him. And Festus Ezeli got a start in place of Andrew Bogut, who was out with back spasms. Ezeli played 27 minutes and went 8-10 with a steal and a block. That's great, but Bogut will be back. They'll be back to playing 19 minutes apiece, and that's going to limit Ezeli's value in most sort of standard formats. Onto the Raptors. Probably the biggest story from the Raptors is the fact that Bebe Nogueira, people are going to know this guy soon. I've been talking about him for a while. He played 25 minutes here. Bismack Biyombo was down to 14. So originally we'll see Biyombo play 34 minutes, and then it was 25 with Nogueira getting 14. And now it's switched, and Biyombo's getting 14, and Nogueira's getting 25. Now, there was foul trouble for Biyombo, so that is a big factor in that. So I don't think that Nogueira is going to be this guy that gets 25 minutes moving forward. But if you're in a deeper league, in a 16-team league, I'm adding him. Now, it's probably only going to be 4 weeks' worth of value, but to me, he is a better player than Nohan's Biyombo. He's a younger player. He's got more potential. He is very raw, but he's a guy to me that has that... I was going to say Rudy Gobert, like, raw potential, but he's not quite at that level. But he can be someone who, maybe Clint Capella, maybe that sort of range of player. I've liked him for quite a while. I think that he can put up big numbers if he gets a chance. We saw here 14-4 with a steal and 3 assists in 25 minutes is really good. He's someone to keep an eye on, definitely, because I can see him playing over Biyombo, because he does have an ability to have to catch the ball. And that's pretty important, because Biyombo can't do it. So there's something to look at with Nogueira. He's someone to keep on your watch list in standard leagues and deeper 16-team leagues. You want to add him, at least for the next few weeks. Look, he might go back to the D-League and do nothing, but I get the feeling that he could start to establish himself as a real backup guy and play some decent minutes. We'll see how it plays out, but it's trending good in the right direction. Damari Carroll went 9-6 with a couple of steals. Pat, 31 minutes for Patterson. 4 points, 10 boards, a steal, and a block. Let's just chalk that one up to a fluke. And Luis Scola went 10-4-2 in his 20 minutes. So he's not getting big run. Patterson got the extra minutes here. Corey Joseph still got 30 minutes. He wasn't all that good. 9 points and one assist, but he still got the 30 minutes. So that's something to keep an eye on. And DeMar DeRozan, he blew up your field goal percentage here, going 5 of 19. He still ended with 16-3-5, so the counting stats aren't too bad. But not a very good efficiency sort of performance from DeMar DeRozan. The next game is the Portland Trailblazers and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Al-Farouq Aminu started this game off red hot. Slowed down a bit, but 16 points with 3 rebounds, 3 steals, and 2 threes is a pretty nice performance. And that's 2 games in a row where he's gotten things back on track. CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard did just do what they do. 17-5-6 with 2 steals and a block for CJ, and 19-3-7 for Lillard. While Myers Leonard was off the bench again behind Noah Vonleh, and Noah Vonleh sucks. Just give Leonard 28 minutes. Don't play Vonleh. He sucks. He's terrible. Leonard wasn't great, but 14 points with 2 threes and 2 assists is okay. And Ed Davis had 13-8 with a couple of blocks. Mason Plumlee, not his best night. 24 minutes, 6-9 with a couple of assists. And not much else to really talk about with the Blazers, I don't think. On to the Timberwolves. This is why you like Ricky Rubio in a head-to-head league. 9 points, 6 rebounds, 1 3, 15 assists, 6 of 6 from the free throw line. Now, 1 of 5 from the field is pretty terrible, but you love the fact that he gave you 15 assists and the 6 rebounds is pretty handy as well. And Gorgui Dieng, 15-5 with an assist and a steal. 25 minutes, he's got to start playing. You know, you want him to get up to 28 minutes, but this is trending definitely in the right direction. He should be owned in all 12-team leagues. Andrew Wiggins, 17-5 with not much else. And Zach LaVine played 23 off the bench and went 12-1-2 with a couple of three-pointers there too. Interesting to note that Nemanja Bjelica's role has definitely decreased. He's down to 13 minutes. Remember when he was the hottest thing in the world? He's a must-own everywhere. That died off pretty quickly. He is not ownable in 12-team leagues, and it's borderline for 14-team leagues at the moment. The Charlotte Hornets and the Chicago Bulls. The Hornets with another victory over the Bulls, and they're led by Nick Batum, who went 24-11-5 with 4 threes and a block. Kemba Walker went 17-6-5 with 2 threes and 3 steals. Big nights from them. And Cody Zeller had his best game of the season, starting in place of Al Jefferson. He played 32 minutes and went 17-8 with a steal and a block. The last game that he started in place of Jefferson, he didn't do anything, but he does have a lot of potential. I'm probably Cody Zeller's only fan that's left. I think that he does have a lot of fantasy potential anyway, so he's someone to keep an eye on. Spencer Hawes was quite good here, 14-7-4, but you know, I'd much rather have Zeller than Hawes. And Frank Kaminsky, who played 27 minutes in the last game, was down to 11 here with 2 points and 3 rebounds. Jeremy Lamb didn't do much, 10 points with a rebound and an assist, and Marvin Williams struggled also with his shot, going 3 of 12 for 7 points and 9 rebounds. Onto the Bulls, Jimmy Butler, 25-8. Yeah, that's pretty it's pretty good. And Pau Gasol went 13-11 and 4 blocks in 26 minutes. And Nikola Mirotic passed the concussion protocol. He was able to start. He played 27 minutes. Wasn't a great line, 7-7 with a 3 and a steal, but he is healthy, obviously, and that's big Tony Snell was terrible because he is terrible. Doug McDermott played another 33 off the bench. 13 points with 3 threes, and he is a great streaming option for threes at this point. Joakim Noah, only the 22 minutes, but 10 rebounds and 6 assists with a block. You don't count on him for any sort of offense. You know what you're looking at with him, and that is rebounds and assists. And not much else really to talk about with the Bulls, I don't think. The next game is the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Miami Heat. Timofey Mozgov, 21 minutes for Mozgov, 8-4 with 2 steals. Forget about it, don't worry about him. There was no LeBron James in this one. He was resting, which seems really piss weak to me, to rest in a game against Miami, in Miami. Just not great from LeBron. The victory, an easy victory for the Heat in this game. Matthew Dellavedova remained the starter, 11-2-5. He is a back-end 12-team league guy, at least until Kyrie comes back. And with LeBron out, Jared Cunningham, played 32 minutes, 11 points with a couple of steals. He's been pretty much irrelevant up until this game, so we don't get too excited there. And Richard Jefferson played 38 minutes, and he was putrid efficiency-wise. 6 of 18 and 4 from 9 from the free throw line. 16 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists. But in a daily fantasy setting, whenever he is able to get minutes, he's generally able to exceed his value considering it's so low. Kevin Love was awful. He was 2 of 11 for 5 points, 8 rebounds and 2 assists. Not his best night at the office. On to the Miami Heat, 14-6 for Bosch. Dragic had his second good game in a row, 17-2-8 with 3 threes. So maybe he's turning it around. Dwayne Wade went 19-5-4, and Hassan Whiteside chimed in with 5 blocks. But probably the biggest story here is the play of Tyler Johnson. 30 minutes for Johnson, 19-5, 2 threes, a steal, and a block. But remember, it's a blowout. They won by almost 20 points. I don't expect him to get 30 minutes a game, especially with Luol Deng close to returning. And look, Justice Winslow played 18 minutes due to foul trouble. So there was a couple of things working in Johnson's favor. He's a deeper, like a 14-team league guy who's a 21-to-22-minute-a-game guy who can put up some numbers. And obviously, if he plays 30, he can produce quite a bit. But then the odds of him doing it are probably pretty limited at this point, I would say. The Sacramento Kings and the Houston Rockets. Rajon Rondo, 13 points, 3 rebounds, 19 assists, and 4 steals. So he got it done for his owners. And we had a Ben McLemore sighting. He played 42 minutes here. 19-9, 3 threes, 3 steals, and a block. I had high hopes for McLemore at the start of the season before it started. He easily dashed those hopes by basically being terrible and George Karl hating him, but his minutes have gone back up. He's back to that 27 minute a night mark. He's at 42 in this one. I don't imagine that to happen all that often, but the numbers are coming, the value's coming. He could be a 12-team league guy to look at, maybe. Darren Collison was pretty good in only 22 minutes here, 18-6 with 4 threes. He's worth looking at in most 12-team leagues, at least worth looking at. And Kostas Koufos with Willie Cauley-Stein out, I like adding him to 11-12 with 2 steals and 2 blocks. He played 31 minutes. He's probably not going to play that many minutes most nights, but he is quite a valuable player. Also some big games from Rudy Gay, 15-6 with 2 steals, and Omri Caspi, 15-3 with 2 blocks. And both of those guys, we know Rudy Gay is ownable, but Caspi is also ownable, given he is now the starter with Cauley-Stein out. DeMarcus Cousins' shooting is horrible at the moment. 4 of 16 here for 14 points, 9 rebounds, and 2 blocks. I don't imagine that is a problem that's going to persist for too long, though, so don't be too worried if you own DeMarcus Cousins. Onto the Rockets, we saw the return of Donatas Motiejunas, finally. And an interesting quote came out from JB Bickerstaff. We're going to play him 20-24 minutes, which seems ridiculous, coming back from a back injury. And it turns out it was ridiculous. Now, unless Bickerstaff meant we're going to play him that when he gets healthy, fully healthy, I don't know. But 6 minutes only for Motiejunas here. But the fact that they would come out and say we're going to play in those many minutes means there's not much faith in these other players, Capella and Jones. In the end, it's probably just going to be a completely messy timeshare. Jones was pretty good, though. 16-5, fantasy-wise, 16-5 with a block in 26 minutes. But the impending rise in Motiejunas' minutes is going to cap Jones. It's going to cap Capella. That's better. So if you own those guys, you hold. But let's just wait and see how it all plays out. Dwight Howard was back to his best here. 22-18, 2 steals and 2 blocks. And James Harden went 31-2-9 with 5 threes. Trevor Ariza also backed up a solid game with another solid game. 12-6 with 3 threes and 3 steals for Ariza. Ty Lawson, 12 minutes. Jason Terry, 18. That's pretty much all you need to know about that battle there. And Marcus Thornton was back down to 5 minutes. He was looking like that maybe he was going to be a threat to start taking some fantasy value off other guys, but obviously didn't happen in this one. The Milwaukee Bucks and the New York Knicks, big victory for the Bucks here. Melo was dealing with a knee bruise. He had 18-5 with 2 threes, a steal, and a block. Not a great, it's an okay night, not a great night. Kristaps Porzingis, he played just 22 minutes. Still was 12-7 and no steals, no blocks. Now, he was dealing with foul trouble, so he was limited in that sense. So don't be too concerned if you own Porzingis. Jose Calderon, 4-6-5 in 26 minutes. Well, Robin Lopez, after playing 30 against the Nets, was back down to his good old 21 minutes for 5 points and a block. He has been terrible this year. And Aaron Aflalo showed us again, this is what he generally does. 13 points, 2 rebounds, no other stats. And that's why I said that Aflalo remains that last player on your roster sort of guy with very minimal upside. Kevin Seraphin is continuing to get big minutes here. 24 minutes here, 4-4-5 with a couple of blocks. 0-4 from the field. If he goes 3-4, which is possible to do, then we're looking at a really nice line. So deeper leagues definitely have to pay attention to Kevin Seraphin. The Milwaukee Bucks, they obviously desperately needed that victory after some tough times and some odd coaching. We had no Jared Bayless, no General Grievous Vasquez, no Tyler Ennis. So with the rookie of the year point guard on the team, we'll start OJ Mayo as the starting point guard. Yep. Now, OJ Mayo was good. He was real good. 17-3-5, and he has been really good. And I am okay adding OJ Mayo if you've got an expendable piece on your 12-team roster. Anything deeper than that, you have to own him because the minutes are there and the production has been pretty good. He's someone to keep an eye on. Michael Carter-Williams played 28 minutes off the bench. And even though he's in a bench role, he's still getting pretty good minutes. And he was pretty impressive here. 23-5 with a block, and he still has to be owned as well. Giannis Antetokounmpo, 17-6-6 with steal and 2 blocks. A good night there. And Jabari Parker returned to the starting lineup. He played 36 minutes, so it looks like the minutes restrictions, forget about them. 17-7 with 2 steals and a block. That's his best game of the season quite comfortably. Greg Monroe at 18-14 as well. Not a bad performance there. Chris Middleton struggled here, shooting just 2 of 10 for 7 points. If Chris Middleton is dropped in your league, though, you need to make sure that he's owned. That's pretty straightforward to me. Just OJ Mayo is the guy that we really need to pay attention to on Milwaukee because he's going to be around in a lot of leagues. The Boston Celtics and the San Antonio Spurs. Jay Crowder, 15-3-3 with 3 threes. Good night from him. And Isaiah Thomas kept it going. 23-4-8 with 2 steals and a 3. A really good performance there. Avery Bradley was red hot as well. 18 points, 4 threes, 2 steals. Obviously, Bradley and Crowder are must-own players, as is obviously Isaiah Thomas. Amir Johnson went 11-11 with a 1-1, so a really good night for him in 32 minutes, and he was able to get some of those extra minutes because David Lee was out of this one. Jared Sullinger just played 27, but 4-8-4 is not terrible. Disappointingly is the right word. Kelly Olynyk only played 12 minutes, going 6-2-1 with a block. I would have liked for him to get 20 minutes with Lee's absence, but obviously it did not occur. Onto the Spurs, Kawhi, 15-8-4 with 2 threes and 2 steals. Wasn't his efficient best, but still a decent line there. LaMarcus Aldridge, 17-8. Manu, 15-7-4. You've heard me talk about Manu so many times. He definitely has 12-team league value. Tim Duncan, 6-5-4, and Tony Parker, 10-6. Not much else to really talk about with the Spurs, I don't think. The next game of the night is the Indiana Pacers and the Utah Jazz. Paul George, 48 points, a career high, 8 threes, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, and 3 steals. Big night from George. He's been incredible this season. And George Hill also got things going here. Only 10 points, but 5 assists, 4 steals, a block, and a couple of threes. So good nights there. Rod Stuckey is on the way up. Now, I thought that the 30 minutes he got were maybe because Monte Ellis was out, but it turns out that Monte Ellis played, and Stuckey still got 32. He went 23-3-3, and you might be able to use him short-term in a standard league. Might. Jan Mahinmi, 23 minutes for him, 6-5 with a couple of steals. He still remains a must-own guy for me, while both Jordan Hill and Lavoie Allen grabbed 8 rebounds in their 23 minutes apiece. CJ Miles was definitely not hot shooting the ball. He was 2 of 10 for 12 points and a 3, but his must-own status remains as is. With no Rudy Gobert, Derek Favors put up a career-high 35 points in 44 minutes, 13 rebounds, a steal, and a block, and Gordon Hayward went 22-5-5 with 3 threes and 2 steals, and that is the Gordon Hayward that we were looking for at the start of the season. 2 games without Gobert, 2 games for Trey Burke over 30 minutes. He played 34 here, went 19-3-7 with 2 threes. I'm okay at adding Trey Burke short-term. Trevor Booker returned to the bench in this game. Trey Lyles got the start, but Booker played more minutes, 23, and went 10-14 with a steal and a block. So if you added Trevor Booker, you're really happy with that sort of return. Let's see what happens, but it's going to be fluctuating, I would imagine. Rod Hood, 6-4. He's struggling at 21 minutes in. Now, he did foul out, so it's not something I'd be overly concerned about in that sense. And not much else to really report from the Jazz. Or Alec Burks really struggled, 9-5, but I don't think it's going to be an ongoing sort of issue. The last game of the night, the Orlando Magic and the Los Angeles Clippers. Lord Alfred Payton, 37 minutes, 21-4-8 with 4 steals. He is definitely in a rhythm at the moment and loves seeing Victor Oladipo play 34 off the bench. 24-7-5 with 3 blocks. This is working out really well at the moment. It's getting really consistent, which is probably the best thing that we can hope for from a fantasy point of view. Nick Vucevic with another 30 minutes, 10-10. Evan Fournier played 17 minutes only, but there was some foul trouble there, so that some of that allowed Oladipo to get that extra run. Aaron Gordon had his best return in a while, 10-7, while Andrew Nicholson disappointed, but still got 23 minutes, 6-7 with 2 threes. He is a guy that has marginal value in 12-team leagues, I would say. Onto the Clippers. We've already talked Jamal. We've already talked Wes Johnson. Blake Griffin went 28-13-7, which is pretty stock standard for him when Chris Paul is out, and DeAndre Jordan 15-14. But no other players scored in double digits. Lance Stephenson was scoreless in 18. Pablo Prigioni was scoreless in 19 minutes. Austin Rivers went 5-4-4 in 29 minutes. And Luke Mamute started and went scoreless as well. The Clippers were lucky they got the victory because they weren't really that... obviously, there's not many big contributions from guys there, or not even big solid contributions from anyone. But they'd be pretty happy that they were able to get out of that with the victory. All right, time for a quick break now, and then we'll be back to talk daily fantasy for Sunday. I saw ya. Now to look at the daily fantasy action for Sunday. There is 5 games on and 1 early game, and then every other game is, well, not every other game, but there's no late games. I'll put it that way. If the other games start at, instead of starting at 7 Eastern, there's 3 that start at 6 Eastern, and there's 1 that starts at 7 Eastern, and then we're done for the day. So the games are over very, very quickly tomorrow. The first game, which again, remember to check your daily fantasy site to check whether these early games are involved. And that first one is Phoenix. The others will be, but the Phoenix-Memphis one, check your site just to make sure that it is included in your tournaments or your matchups or whatever it is, your head-to-heads, anything. Just check which games are actually part of it. There's not a massive amount of value across the slate, I would say, for Sunday. The first game is Phoenix versus Memphis, so the Memphis guys are all looking at a bit of a boost with the Suns allowing some extra points, especially along the wings. So there's a couple of guys you can take a look at. Courtney Lee, Matt Barnes, at 3,500 for Lee, 4,200 for Barnes. Barnes has been putting up 23 a game, which is pretty good over the last 3 games. Courtney Lee's averaging 15.7 over his last 5. We don't really know the way the minutes going to play out. They're both averaged 27 a game over the last 5 games, so they're worth looking at in tournaments, but it's very hard to rely upon them in cash games. I do like Mike Conley a lot for cash games, though. At 6,700, he put up 30 in the last game. If he gives you 33 here, you're pretty much home. And again, this is not a difficult matchup. Well, it's a matchup where the opposition does allow fantasy points to be accumulated. So that's something that we can try and exploit as much as possible. Jeff Green falls into the Matt Barnes, Courtney Lee sort of equation. He's at 4,500. He's someone to sort of have a look at. 8,100 for Marc Gasol. Yeah, maybe. He's averaging 45 across his last three, 36 across his last five. I don't hate it. There's probably some other better options on the board, but it's not a terrible option. Eric Bledsoe is at 8,800. That's real expensive, but there are no good high-price shooting guard options on the board. So if you're looking to play one, Bledsoe is going to be the guy. Just don't expect him to really smash five times value or anything like that. And Brandon Knight is almost up to 8,000. And it's hard to play him as well. He's averaging 33 points, and he's a pretty consistent 33-point guy in general. 33 over his last three, 32 in his last game, 33 over his last five. That's nice and consistent, but it's not enough at that salary. So he was a guy that we could smash early on because his salary was low. It's come right up, and it's a little bit harder to rely upon him now. John Lewis at 4,000 is an okay guy to look at in tournaments. Same as Markieff Morris at 5,100. Lua outscored Morris in the last game, but played less minutes. So which way do you look? Are they going to give Morris more minutes? It makes it impossible to use them in cash games, really, because then they could also throw Mirza Teletovic out there and play him 27 minutes. I'd say that the likelihood is going to be Lua or Morris play the big minutes, but to know which one it's going to be, it's pretty impossible. Even if Chandler plays, I don't think I'd want to use him, but Alex Len becomes intriguing in this matchup because we're going up against a big front line, Gasol and Randolph. In the games where the Suns have gone real small, it's been against smaller front courts. And Len, when he played 30 minutes, he can put up big numbers. He had a 39-point game in the last five. And he might have to stay out there 30 minutes in this game. So he's priced at 3,900, Alex Len. So if you see that Tyson Chandler's out, I wouldn't mind putting him into a lineup because he could go out and really, really exceed value. So that's someone to pay a bit of attention to. TJ Warren's in a slump, so I'm not using him, even though he's only a 4,200 player. The next game is the Brooklyn Nets and the Golden State Warriors. The Nets are probably the team that got the closest to beating the Warriors and should have beaten the Warriors earlier in the season in Oakland. The Warriors now travel down from Toronto to take them on. They're favored by 10. The total is 209 here. We don't know the status of Andrew Bogut with that back spasms. And for the Nets, we've got Sergei Karasev, who rolled an ankle in practice, as did Rondé Hollis-Jefferson. So both of those guys may not play. Now, Karasev doesn't have much of an impact, but Hollis-Jefferson, if he doesn't play, there's going to be more minutes for guys like Wayne Ellington and for the other guy who's completely slipped my mind, Bojan Bogdanovic. So then they become guys that you can maybe pay attention to in tournaments. Klay Thompson at 5,900 has been playing really well, so I think that he is a guy that we definitely want to pay attention to here. Same as Thad Young at 6,600. He has been he's been solid. He hasn't been at his best of late, but it doesn't mean that we can't use him. He still can be used. Jarrett Jack, on the other hand, at 6,200, I don't like the way things are heading with him. I would avoid him. Brook Lopez at 8,200, I'm okay. He's been putting up big numbers, averaging almost 39. It's not quite enough at 8,000, but he could be in a situation where the game is going to be up tempo, and he's got to really carry this team. Steph Curry at 11,100, another 54 today from him. There is real blowout potential here, though, so he might not be on the court that much, but it's really hard to fade Steph Curry at 11,100. It's an expensive price, but you know that you're basically locking yourself in for 50 points. The problem I have in this sort of slate is there's not many value plays to surround him with, so it might not be the best option. Draymond Green at 8,100, there's not many good high-priced power forwards playing either, so if you're looking for a high-priced power forward, Draymond's going to be the best option, but at 8,100... I don't know. He hasn't exceeded 40 points in his last five, and he needs to get to 40. Is this an opportunity for him to do it? Maybe, but I don't really love it here. In fact, there's not a huge amount, apart from Klay Thompson and probably Thad Young and Brook Lopez, there's not many guys who are really sort of oozing DFS appeal. The Dallas Mavericks and the Washington Wizards are up next. The Mavericks are favored by 2. The total is 207.5. Dirk suffered a hip injury in the last game, but he played through it. He looks fine. I don't think there's any concern there. And JJ Barea, who's missed the last few with an ankle injury, he is questionable in this one. If he misses, Ray Felton is basically absorbing all of his minutes. So Felton becomes a guy you can look at in tournaments. Now, for the Wizards, we don't know what's happening with the center position. Nene, Chris Humphries, Drew Gooden, they all missed the last game. And Marcin Gortat is already out of this one. So Ron Hollins was shit. In the last game, he only played 10 minutes. Jared Dudley was terrible, but you'd expect him to be better than that in the next game, and everyone will be off him. Like, I'm never playing Dudley again. You'll be hearing people say that, and that's fine. That means his ownership goes right down. He's still minimum salary, and even if guys like Humphreys play, he still should get 27 to 30 minutes. So a tournament lineup with Dudley in it, it could actually strike big if something happens. But there's a lot of people who'll be swearing off him. And I'm not one to ever swear off people in that sort of sense, because his ownership could go way down and it could work in your favor. It might not, so that's not a cash game play, definitely, but it's something to pay attention to. Wes Matthews is under 5,000. He's at 4,800. He's had some bad games. He hasn't looked good, but the Wizards, it looks like a decent matchup for him. I think that he is value at 4,800. John Wall at 89. Yeah, he's been good. He's averaged over 50 in the last three. That's expensive, but I'm sort of okay with using him at that point. It's not a difficult matchup against Dallas, so I think there's a little bit of value for him. Dirk at 7,000, I'd probably leave that alone. Brad Beal at 7,500. He's been really good as of late, so I can understand the rationale behind using Bradley Beal. But 7,500 is making it tougher. Darren Williams at 6,900 as well. I'm okay with using Williams. I think this is a good situation for him. He's been playing really well. I'm definitely okay with him. And same with Zaza Pachulia at 6,600. He's pretty much a lock for double-digit rebounds almost every night he plays. So I think that he is someone that is definitely worth having a look at. The next game is the Clippers and the Pistons. The Pistons are favored by 9.5. The total is 197 in this game. Stanley Johnson, did I say Clippers or Lakers? I don't remember what I said. It's the Lakers anyway, going up against the Pistons. There's a lot of value for Pistons guys if you think that it's kept relatively close, because it's the Lakers. So Stanley Johnson at minimum salary, he's actually averaging 21 across his last three. So at 3,500, you would love to get that. Reggie Jackson at 7,900, he's been smashing it of late. I think he's a great play. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope has been struggling. He's at 4,800, but I'll probably stay off him. Andre Drummond at 9,600, I think this looks like a great spot for him. Marcus Morris at 6,300 in some red-hot form coming into an even easier matchup. And Ersan Ilyasova also has some tournament value at 4,400. On the Lakers side of things, probably the best value guy on the board here is D'Angelo Russell at 5,300. He played big minutes in the last game. We don't know if Byron Scott is going to continue to sit Nick Young out, but it's meant big minutes for most of the other guards. So he's someone that we can look at. Jordan Clarkson's been good, but it's not translating into daily fantasy value, so it's hard to look at him. And Kobe Bryant at 6,900 has been putting up big numbers. So I think that we can use Kobe Bryant in certain sort of tournaments. He's averaging 32 across the last three games. At 6,900, that is clearly enough value. Lou Williams has also been on a hot streak with Nick Young sitting out. So you may, if you think that Young's going to miss again, you might get another 30 minutes from Lou Williams, and he might be worthwhile but looking at. The next game is the Kings and the Thunder. This is the last game. It is an 11.5-point favorite for the Thunders with a total of 220.5. It's a huge total. I think there is a value in a lot of spots here. Serge Ibaka struggled in the last game, but he's only 6,200. This is a pretty tasty matchup for him. Kevin Durant at 10,400 and Russell Westbrook at 10,800. Both of those guys are really appealing. If you're looking for some cheaper options, I like Omri Caspi from Sacramento and Darren Collison. Both of those guys have been putting up pretty rock solid numbers. Caspi's now a starter, so look for 30 minutes out of him and 24-25 points. And Kostas Koufos at 4,600. He was really good in the last game. He's been pretty rock solid for most of the season. So I think that at 4,600, you can definitely look his way. Boogie Cousins has burnt a lot of people lately. He's 10,300, so the salary's come down. It's not a horrible matchup for him. I think that he can get things back on track here, so I'm okay with using him. And Ben McLemore is a tournament play at 3,800. Things are going in the right direction for him. Rajon Rondo at 8,000. Put up almost 50 today, but the trend has not been that way. So you can look at it and maybe consider it, but I reckon you'd probably be able to find other players to get into the lineup ahead of Rajon Rondo. All right, let's bring up the daily fantasy plays of the day now. At point guard, Darren Collison at 5,000, Mike Conley at 6,700, and Reggie Jackson at 79. Shooting guards, Wes Matthews, 48, Klay Thompson, 59, and Eric Bledsoe at 88. As I mentioned before, Bledsoe's not great value at that price, but there's just no other high-priced shooting guards available. Small forward, Stanley Johnson at 35 min salary, Marcus Morris, 63, and Kevin Durant at 10,400. Power forwards, Ersan Ilyasova, 4,400. Serge Ibaka, 6,200. And Draymond Green, 81, in the same sort of boat as Eric Bledsoe. And for centers, Kostas Kufos at 46. Zaza Pachulia at 6,600. And Andre Drummond at 9,700. That is it, guys. We are done for today. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_Bebo. And just a quick shout out. Someone, I think it was John on Twitter, that sent me a tweet and said, I've been listening to your latest podcast at half speed. I thought, okay, what are you doing that for? And he said, it is just, it's a massive pisser. And if you don't know what a pisser is, it just means something that's, you know, piss your pants funny. So I listened to it, and it sounds like I'm off my face. I've had about a million beers. If you want to have a listen, just go into your podcast app and choose speed at half. Have a listen to how I sound. I can't even explain it. I just sound like I'm completely smashed. So if you're looking for something funny to do for about 5 seconds, turn the speed on to half, listen to me talk on the podcast, and let me know what you think, because I was like laying down yesterday listening to it and going, this is like, I sound like a complete idiot. And I can assure you that I wasn't drunk when I was doing it. Again, follow me on Twitter at redrock_Bball. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on YouTube. Check out basketballmonster.com, hardwoodparoxysm.com, and redrockbasketball.com. That's it, guys. We are done. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.